Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. This podcast features session audio from the EDUCAUSE 2013 annual meeting. You can find more audio and video by searching for EDUCAUSE on YouTube and iTunes.
I do want to spend some time with you talking about quality. I have three questions to raise and hope that they do provide some encouragement for discussion. First, about innovation, what is it outside and within our colleges and universities? This is a subject you've been considering throughout most of this conference, so I will not dwell on it, but I do want to explore this for a few minutes to establish a foundation for the quality discussion. Second, what happens when innovation meets quality? What are the questions that need to be asked? What are the questions that need to be answered? And finally, what are our options to assure quality? With regard to innovation, what are we talking about? We're talking about new non-institutional providers of MOOCs or private courses or badges, competency-based education, prior learning assessment. And you're very familiar with the examples such as Coursera, Udacity, some of the international MOOCs that have started up. ACE Credit is another provider here, as is Kale, Straighterline, private companies providing courses, Sailor badges from Mozilla. Now, there are a number of characteristics of these new providers, if you will. They're either offering courses or pieces of courses or offerings that wouldn't even be considered typically a course in a traditional institution. They encourage episodic education as compared to sustained education, a sustained educational experience that is at least the aspiration of many seeking a degree. These new providers have offerings that are sometimes very crowded, especially when we're talking about MOOCs. On the other hand, these offerings sometimes carry with them a certain isolation, and you read about what do students need, how much interaction, can they be successful in a non-institutional setting, given that you're working perhaps alone, perhaps at a computer at home. Overwhelmingly, we're talking about online offerings that are not for credit, that are free or low cost, and they are not accredited. The key point with regard to our conversation this afternoon. The offerings here, whether MOOCs or badges or competency-based education outside of current colleges and universities, may be a symptom of a broader change, structural change in higher education, and some call this a disaggregation of U.S. higher education, where throughout most of our history, credentialing, determinations of academic quality, development of curricula, all of these activities have been concentrated in our traditional colleges and universities. But we are now in a mode where we have multiple sources of educational offerings, we have multiple sources of certification, and we have, as indicated, multiple providers who are deciding what is taught, who teaches it, and academic standards. So if we are at least in part experiencing some disaggregation, what is the future for the structure of higher education as we go forward? I was taken by an article in the Chronicle of Higher Education several months ago by Clay Shirky. He was really talking about MOOCs, but I think this applies to all of these providers. And he said, look, this is happening in part because the demand for education, and he talked about complex knowledge, is beyond the ability of our current, or capacity, not ability, of our current colleges and universities. He said, we're expanding the horizon of the visible. I like that phrase. And then he said, look, people are looking for inexpensive provision of complicated knowledge, and it's outside of higher education. And That led me to reflect on whether certain elements, at least, of innovation may reshape the higher education experience in some very significant and perhaps permanent ways, something we need to keep in mind. The innovation I've talked about thus far is outside colleges and universities, but as you know, a lot is going on within our institutions. We have competency-based degree programs and degrees. We have award of credits to MOOCs, to private courses. We have the integration of MOOCs and standard curricula. We have creating MOOCs and MOOC content by traditional colleges and universities. I'm always a little hesitant with the notion of innovation, and as I'm using it today, because a number of the things that are going on are not new, but we have given them a fresh look. I'm thinking particularly about competency-based education, and I'm old enough to remember a number of much earlier experiences with competency-based education. But it's intriguing that we have pulled all these approaches together and given them the stamp innovation. So in response to the first question about innovation, we're experiencing it in outside higher education through these various new providers, and we're experiencing it within higher education through decisions by colleges and universities to offer credit and accept offerings to provide content for education outside their institutions and to integrate the new provider offerings into standard curricula. And an issue I would put before you is, are we developing here over time an alternative vision of organizing learning going forward? Well, what about my second question, when innovation meets quality? What questions need to be answered? And I think they're questions in three areas. How do we organize for quality? How do we address expected capacity and results from what we're calling innovative efforts? And is there anything in terms of values or a vision for these innovative undertakings? Is there any glue? Is there any shared thinking to date about what we think is most important and where we would like to go? When we talk about organizing for quality, it seems to me we want to know what quality expectations are to apply generally. We need to identify that specifically. We have to identify specifically what we think we want to know about quality. We need to decide who should undertake review of quality. And we need to decide what are we going to look at when we talk about quality. What is the unit of analysis to be? When we look at capacity and results, perhaps the most important question, or it is the most important question to me, is how do we know when students have learned and when they are successful? The student achievement question, in my view, is at the heart of our examination of both capacity and results when we're talking about innovative efforts. We have a number of other questions. What counts as quality content? How do we identify quality faculty? And how do we know how to separate good innovation from not so good innovation? These new providers have a lot of different offerings. When are they substandard? How are we going to make those judgments? These four questions to me go to the core of what we need to address when it comes to quality. With regard to values and vision, is current innovation higher education or not? A number of people say yes. A number of people say no. It's an issue we need to address. We need to have as part of our dialogue. What do we think in the context of these innovations is an educated person? Do we have such a notion, or are we in some kind of alternative business? And then do the quality expectations of the so-called traditional sector apply to innovation and to these new providers? So you could see we have very big, very, very penetrating questions that we need to address about whatever process we use for quality, what we expect in terms of both capacity and results, and the values that we bring to our judgments about quality and the vision that we bring for the success of innovative undertakings. What about the third question? What are our options to assure quality? The most obvious response is accreditation. Accreditation's been with us for a very long time. It's over 100 years old. We have 85 different recognized accrediting organizations in the United States. We have the most mature, the most diverse, the most comprehensive quality review capacity of any country in the world. There are 8,300, or last month there were 8,300 accredited institutions. A number of them are in Title IV, receive federal aid, but there are even more institutions that are accredited by recognized accreditors but don't participate in federal student aid programs. There are more than 21,000 different accredited programs in the United States as well. I'm talking about business, law, medicine, the whole range of health-related programs, nursing. You're familiar with a lot of these because accreditors are on your campuses. And something discussed a great deal of late, accreditation is central to the eligibility of colleges and universities for federal student aid. That amounts to roughly $175 billion a year. That's a very large amount of money, even for the United States. And the extent to which we have seen student aid increase has been a driving factor with regard to the federal government's expectations of accreditation. And the $175 billion does not include money that might be available through various state programs, for example, for student assistance. Accreditation is about assuring and improving quality, assuring that we have met threshold expectations and that we're working on institutions and programs getting better. And crucially, it's important to this conversation, accreditation either looks at institutions or it looks at programs. It has not ventured very often, if at all, into the world of courses or other types of offerings. Accreditation is focused on credit education, and it is focused on certificates and degrees. So accreditation, created by higher education, reflects the traditional higher education structure that is prevalent in this country. Accreditation makes certain assumptions in how it goes about its work. It's a mission-based approach to quality. It is peer-based. Peer review is the critical mechanism to examine quality. It is often qualitative as well as quantitative. It is aspirational. Accreditors have standards that are created by working with institutions and programs that seek to help us get better, that seek to articulate what do we want to achieve, where do we want to go. It's a very complex undertaking, as you know, and it's periodic. You'll go through accreditation reviews anywhere from every 3 years to 10 years, and in some instances even more frequently. Accreditation is what I call conserving by design. That is, it is not going to change without careful thought and consideration. It is built on many, many years of tradition. It's also deeply ingrained in our society. Try to transfer credits if you didn't go to an accredited institution. You can't get student aid unless you go to an accredited institution. Most foundations and corporations will not provide money to an institution unless it's accredited. So both the public money from the public sector and from the private sector relies on accredited status. And for all that we criticize it, and we do, accreditation is the litmus test of baseline academic quality. In many ways, also, accreditation embodies the history of how we have thought about quality in this country. Accreditation also encompasses certain values and expectations about quality. And recall a few minutes ago, I raised the value question with regard to innovation and on what values is it based. But there is within accreditation a vision of an educated person. There is a commitment to inquiry and freedom of thought. There is a commitment to all of us seeking student success. Accreditation is built on the concept of a coherent curriculum and learning experience. It defines collegiate level learning, it requires qualified faculty, and it values an environment of learning, not just learning, but an environment for learning. Can we take these values and expectations associated with quality as seen through the eyes of accreditation and apply them or not to the kind of innovation we have been discussing, especially for the last 18 months in this country? That is the question. Now, saying all of that, one might think I'm saying that, well, of course, accreditation should be the means by which we examine the quality of innovative efforts. But I'm not saying that. I'm saying that's one option, and there are lots of others, and let me share some of these with you for your consideration. One, competency-based education efforts, assessment of prior learning, MOOCs. Many of these innovations have some built-in internal quality review capacity. Maybe that's enough to judge quality. That would be one option. Another would be to say, okay, I see the point about accreditation, but we're going to have to change it. We're going to have to modify it. We would have to find some way to get beyond institutions and programs to privately offered courses to the competency approaches to MOOCs, because standard accreditation just doesn't address the innovative efforts. We went out in July and August to all of the 85 recognized accreditors, and we asked them, are you looking at MOOCs? Are you looking at competency-based education? Are you looking at assessment of prior learning that is taking place outside the colleges and universities that you accredit? And the answer was uniformly no. 50% of the accreditors responded to our survey, and all of them said, we are not looking at what is under that umbrella of innovation today, if it is innovation outside colleges and universities. And we've begun at CHEA raising with the recognized accreditors, well, is this something we need to look at? If so, how do we do it? What do we need to take into consideration? So if he wanted to use accreditation as it is currently structured, that accreditation would have to go through some changes. Another option for examining the quality of innovative efforts is to create new accreditation or other forms of external quality review. We could have, I'm not recommending this, we could have course accreditors, we could have accreditors for competency-based education, we could have accreditors for MOOCs. We could look at all of that, and it's very easy to create an accrediting organization. Whether it can be effective and sustained is another issue. But these are all options, and here are some more. Forget about accreditation. It's complex, it's bureaucratic. You've all had at least one annoying experience with it. I know I have. over the years. We could develop national standards. I didn't say federal. I said national standards for these new providers, for these innovations outside colleges and universities. A single set of standards to judge quality. We could develop national standards for both traditional education and the new providers and the innovative offerings. We all would have to meet these standards. We could develop a ranking system. We could develop a ranking system for MOOCs or for competency-based education offerings or for private course providers. Or we could have the government decide quality at the state or federal level. Again, I'm not recommending any of these. I am offering up ways of thinking about how we want to approach quality going forward as we're dealing with the innovation that is all around us. Well, I've raised a lot of questions with you, so I thought I owed you some effort at some answers. About innovation, a lot of questions about what is happening and where it's going. As I said earlier, not all of this is new, but I do think it's consequential, and I do think it's potentially transformative, not necessarily for all of higher education, but certainly for some of higher education. So I believe this will be with us, or elements of what is going on will be with us for some time to come. I believe it is altering the structure of higher education in some ways. We're in an early stage with regard to that. About innovation and quality, I raised a lot of questions about that at which we need to look. Quality process, capacity, results. We're going to have to make some decisions at your institution, as an academic community, as a sector of higher education, about what counts as quality, and we're going to need to sustain it through innovation. And finally, about the quality options, I would move in the direction of current or new accreditation or quality review combined with internal review. I would not turn the judgment or definition or description of quality over to government or to a ranking system. I think that peer review has stood higher education in good stead for many, many years. It's been enormously valuable. It's produced the effectiveness and the resilience and the high quality that we have had in higher education, and I'd be very loath to give that up. And that's what national standards or a government-run system or a ranking system, unless we chose to do it in higher education, which at least in this country we have not chosen to do, or a ranking system would produce the same effective and high quality system. So we need to know what the questions are. We need to they help us get to answers and to focus on what we want to do in the future with regard to quality. So I've been trying to say three things this afternoon. We have significant innovation underway both within our institutions and outside of them, and I do think it's consequential over time. There are key quality questions that we need to be addressing at the heart of this. The most important questions are tied to student learning and student achievement. We are concerned about the effectiveness of curricula, of faculty. What are our results? And then with regard to options to address quality, we have a whole range of them, as I've tried to lay out. We're going to need to make some choices down the road about preferred options to examine, to define, and to judge quality as this relates to innovation. Thank you very much. Now, if you have, I can't see any of you very well, But I would be happy to answer any questions or try to answer any questions that you have. Hi, I can see you vaguely, yes.
Okay. Kirby Francis, Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary. How do we respond to particularly movements in the for-profit providers to be partnering with the corporate sector and sort of doing an end around where, well, we'll do badging, we'll do whatever skills competency building, provide you with employees who have sort of a narrow set of skills, certainly not what we would consider a classical liberal education, and in some ways do an end around us, especially when there seems to be movement from the DOE and the DOJ to sort of support that. It's almost like it cuts the value of our quality out of the picture. So how do we respond to that as those of us who would be more mindful of accreditation?
I need a little help in making sure I understand the question. Are you saying, and I'm not sure, that we're having, perhaps through corporations, through the for-profit sector, a certain type of educational experience being offered? It's called higher education.
Right.
That is very different from a collegiate or campus-based experience.
Yeah, when a parent, you know, speaking, for example, perhaps for colleges, when a parent sends their 17-year-old to college, there's a certain value proposition they're buying
yes.
into, that there will be a certain placement opportunity that their student, that their child will have after having gotten this degree. If the for-profit providers and the corporate world cut us out of that loop and say, well, just send your 17-year-olds to us and we'll sort of figure it out as we go, it makes it very difficult for those of us who are working with accreditation, which is, let's face it, making things much more expensive and slow for us to respond to. I think worthwhile. But where's our value proposition over against what's happening?
All right, I'm not sure. Let me try to say this.
Sure.
I'm not sure how accreditation, I can imagine, but I'm not sure how accreditation gets in the mix there. But I think one of the things we're struggling with in this country is how we define higher education. There's a really interesting article that you probably saw in last Sunday's New York Times by Frank Bruni on an op-ed where he talks about higher education having an identity crisis and that we need to deal with it. And part of it is around, on the one hand, this vision that a lot of people have, I know I value it, of a sustained educational experience, a coherent curriculum, an environment for learning. That's what higher education is about, versus a certain number of courses that may assist you with employment, and it's not important that there's a degree involved. There may be a certificate involved, but it's more of a transactional experience. He called it a pecuniary experience, which I thought was a bit harsh. I'm worried that more and more we're moving in the direction of what the corporate providers are doing and the very vocationally focused for-profit providers, because there are for-profits that have attempted to move into general education and the liberal arts. I'm worried that this corporate approach is taking us over, all except for those of us who can afford rather costly tuition. And I think what we need to be doing, if we value the image of a sustained educational experience, is not only speak to its vocational value, which we've been doing for a lot of years. We got ourselves in this position. All right. But also to the value of the broader experience. And the Council of Independent Colleges is just launched a liberal arts initiative in that regard. I know that's something that's very important to, I'm from Washington, AACNU, all right, the Association of American Colleges and Universities. I know we at CHEA stress that. we're going to have to, I think, be much more powerful advocates for that vision of education, because some of it is slipping away. Again, I don't think it'll go away entirely, but I do think it's going to be harder and harder for people who have less rather than more to have. Other questions? Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm Ellen Murphy. I am not sure that I agree with you that accreditation, the way we currently have it established in this country, really does ensure a quality education.
You would not be alone in saying that.
Yeah, and I think that that's a problem because, you know, we have state institutions that are accredited and considered good institutions that have graduation rates of 16, 20, 25%. I mean, that's appallingly low. We have all kinds of qualifications for a degree that don't match each other, and some institutions that offer very poor quality classes, which is why the Lumina Foundation had to come up with a degree qualification profile. That's why all of these things are coming into play. So I think if we fool ourselves to believe that the accreditation process, the way it currently is, guarantees quality education, the masses will disregard it, and we will end up with no one respecting that because it's currently broken or close to being broken. And that concerns me quite a bit. I've been through three different regional accrediting agencies. I've worked with several colleges and universities, and I got into education because I love education and I'm an idealist. And truthfully, when I see some of the things that pass accreditation and have passed, it really, really bothers me a lot because I want it to mean something, and I'm not sure that it does.
A couple points in response to what you're saying. I did not say, nor would I say, and I don't know very many people who would say that accreditation guarantees quality. That's an extraordinarily strong claim that cannot be made. What accreditation does do, as I said earlier, is assure threshold quality. That's not guaranteeing quality. One, two, yes, we have accredited institutions that are not doing the kind of job that we want done with students. There's no question about that. Three, accreditation works in a number of instances and doesn't work in other instances. I can find great advocates, and I can find people who will say very harsh things with some foundation for saying those very harsh things. I'm pointing to it as a mechanism that we have used for a very long time that does have value, that does need to get better, and does need to be part of all of the changes that we're experiencing. I'm also saying that in choosing how to address quality review of what we're now calling innovation, accreditation is one of a number of options. I'm not saying we want to go that way. I do think there's certain elements of it that are valuable, and peer review in particular, I think is valuable because peer review is the academy's way of having appropriate authority for defining quality, and I think that's very important. But you make a number of good points, and it's something we need to be working on as we go forward.
Okay, please join me in thanking our speaker.